It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Welcome to Money for Lunch. It's always good to have you here, and I'm just going to dive right into it, get this party started with the quote of the day. Product life is measured in months, not years. And as soon as you introduce a product, understand that others in your business are going to reverse engineer it to duplicate the results after they've circumnavigated the patents, trademarks, and intellectual properties. And that is by best-selling author Michael E. Gerber from the E-Myth series. And I just think that's such a telling remark there, that product life is no longer measured in months or years, right? That as soon as you come out with the products, others are going to reverse engineer it, duplicate the results, circumnavigated the patents, the trademarks, and the intellectual properties. So very interesting, very truthful, very much on point as we're talking about today with my guest, Anton Lenov. I just killed your name, but anyway, so let me tell you real quick. Anton is the founder of Trademark Garden. And I just love that name. So Anton is founder of Trademark Garden, a law firm that serves the needs of small businesses, innovators, and startups, offering a full suite of intellectual property and business law services. Anton is experienced in trademark prosecution, negotiation of license and assignment agreements, and IP litigation, introducing opposition and cancellation proceedings before the trademark trial and appeal an appeal board representing both the petitioner and the respondent. Anton Lenov, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Hi, pleasure to be here.
Excellent. Well, you know what? This is really, we're in a situation now, I should say not a situation, but a time now where I think IP law or intellectual property law is more important than ever, because we really have become this society of ideas and formulas and, you know, all this other stuff of brand names that have become powerful. So, you know, before we get started, why don't you kind of give us a little bit of a primer? What is intellectual property versus, let's say, personal real property?
Sure. So intellectual property is anything that is the product of the human mind that stands apart from this physical manifestation of something. So, for example, let's say you go out to a store and you buy a movie. Let's say, you know, you buy Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring. So the actual physical disc that you have is your personal property. You can view it. You can show it to your friends. The studio that produced the movie can't just come into your home and confiscate it. It is your property. However, the ideas that are contained in it, you know, the story, the characters, Frodo, the ring, Sauron, all of that is intellectual property of the studio, and then at least to put it, the movie forms of them are intellectual property of the studio. So if you wanted to create your own spinoff, your own sequel, and take the characters, make your own movie, you couldn't do that because you would be taking the intellectual property, the products of the mind that are the property of the movie studio. But this can apply to anything. This can apply to product designs. This can apply to branding. This can apply to, as I've said, you know, fictional characters, story characters. And those three things are covered by the three main types of intellectual property, which we're going to get a bit more into, but it's trademark, patent, and copyright.
All right, so let me ask you this. Let's say I'm a startup or I'm a small business. Is IP important at this stage in my company's life? I mean, isn't IP really for like big companies?
Yeah, and you know, that's a really common misconception, because when people think about IP, a lot of times they do think about movie studios, they think about really big tech companies like Apple and Microsoft patenting their certain devices or software. But IP is, in the current marketplace, extremely important to everyone, especially trademark, which protects your branding. So, for example, I do a lot of business with Amazon sellers, and IP is what protects the names of individual Amazon sellers and their Amazon stores from, say, Chinese counterfeiting. Because at the end of the day, a lot of people are going to be selling things that, like your intro quote said, people can counterfeit, people can reverse engineer, people can try to fake your products. And IP is what protects that. So that's number one. Number two, IP is how you protect your name. So every business, large and small, has a name, usually has a logo, and it's very important because this is what identifies you to your consumers. So even if you're a small mom and pop or a small internet shop, you're trying to build your name. You're trying to get recognition. You're trying to get up higher in the Google search results. You're trying to get your SEO up. You're trying to, get customers and clients to know that this name stands for something that's, going to give them good service, going to generate you referrals. And IP is what protects that. IP is what prevents somebody else from coming along and saying, oh, you've been using this name for 3 years. Well, too bad. I've been using it for 5. You have to stop using it. You might have not ever known about them previously, but if you haven't secured your IP right, that can happen. Alternately, somebody else can come in, start using your name, start using your slogan. You go after them, and they say, okay, go ahead, prove it. Prove that I'm infringing. Prove that I stole your name. Well, if you're not properly protected, you might be able to, in the end, prove it and get them to stop using your name, using your slogans. But it's going to cost you a lot of money, because you're going to have to pay attorneys now to, find evidence, to probably sue them, to go through a discovery process. It's all very expensive. So getting basic IP rights up front is an insurance policy for your brand. It's an insurance policy for your products, and it's an insurance policy against counterfeiting that, when compared to the cost of litigation and having to fight it, down the line, if you hadn't secured it up front, it's a really wise choice for a business of any size. If you're willing to, invest anything in your business, one of the first things you should probably invest in is at least a basic suite of IP protection, so that once you've built up that recognition, you can keep it.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And you mentioned, how do I put this? Our Chinese counterparts. And the Chinese really don't give a hoot about IP protection, IP law. I mean, a lot of people don't know this, but, the Chinese will go to trade shows and will meet with people and essentially try to do exactly what I talked about at the beginning of the show, try to reverse engineer something that they like. They have no qualms about, going to these trade shows in the UK and also in the US and seeing what people are doing.
Oh, yeah. And what's even more insidious from a legal standpoint, so there's something called a Madrid application, which is when you try to secure your international rights based on an application in your home country. So let's say that you are a US company, but you want to sell abroad, you want to sell in Europe, you want to sell maybe you do want to sell in China. So you can file something called a Madrid application, which goes to all these different IP offices all over the world. And what some Chinese companies do is they track these Madrid filings when they see one. If there hasn't been a previous filing specifically in China, they will file a Chinese filing to get ahead of the Madrid applicant and then basically hold them for ransom and say, okay, if you pay me X amount, I'll get rid of my Chinese filing that's holding up your, big expensive Madrid application. So there is a lot of trouble that from the IP realm that comes from China. And I usually tell clients, if you're worried about protecting your intellectual property in China, honestly, stop worrying, because you're probably not going to be able to do it just plan around not being able to do it, but let's make a plan to protect it in the U.S. Let's make sure that Chinese counterfeiters export and sell to the U.S. Maybe they'll be able to do it in China, and there's honestly, realistically, probably not much we can do about that. But what we can do is we can lock down their ability to export to the U.S., we can try to lock down their ability to export to the EU, and we can try to protect you that way to at least, you know, get those markets locked down.
Yeah, and that's important because, let me tell you, what I have found is that there's a good majority of people, business owners, that do want to play fairly, right? And so if you tell them, hey, that, you know, that product that you're importing is, you know, is counterfeit or whatever, I think a lot of them would, what do you call it, stop importing them. Especially if they, you know, especially if they received a gentle reminder from your legal staff saying, hey, so it's just an amazing thing. So it sounds like if I have, you know, it sounds like, just to recap, I guess, if you're going to do something and you think your IP might be affected, or that you have something that's worth protecting, you should really do that first as a really inexpensive form of insurance and to offset litigation expenses for down the road.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, you know, inexpensive by legal services standards,
right. But,
you know, honestly, for a small company, they can usually reasonably protect themselves for, you know, $2,000 or less, which is, again, by legal, compared to litigation, that is nothing. That is, you know, a small one-time cost. And then, plus, you know, even if there are issues, at least you know them up front. So, obviously, you can't get protection for anything you want. For example, even if you swear up and down that you just now came up with the name Microsoft for software, you're not going to get that. So, but, you know, that's an obvious case, but there are a lot of cases when people genuinely do come up with what they believe is an original idea, but somebody else had come up with it before or come up with something similar. And, but if you have help in this process, you have somebody that can go out, look what's out there and say, hey, you know, there's this other company, they're using, you know, this name, or they have, you know, this, you know, these identifying features or whatever. Then you know ahead of time, and you can either try to see if you can get rights to what you're trying to get to. You can alter your names, your brand, whatever, before it goes to market. Because, you know, I've had a lot of clients that you know, I get a bit later on when they're already having issues, and they're saying, you know, I have, you know, X, you know, tens of thousands of dollars, whatever, worth of inventory sitting there, and now I have this problem where, you know, somebody else is claiming I'm infringing their trademark, and, you know, what do I do? Well, try to help, but the problem is, as with any legal proceeding, you know, nothing is guaranteed at that point, you know, and then maybe the trademark you're using is branded on all of your inventory really is infringing, and they're going to end up winning. At that point, you not only might have to pay them for the infringement, but then you have to bear the cost of rebranding. And if you can secure that ahead of time, and you can be, you know, rest assured that no, nobody's going to force me to rebrand, I'm not going to have to rebrand, and then you order your tens of thousands of dollars worth of inventory, knowing that you're not going to suddenly have to, you know, pull the site down, pull it off the shelves, whatever, and, you know, have it all rebranded, that's a great peace of mind, and that saves you from having to worry about something which, you know, could be a big business disruption, could lead customers to say, like, what happened? Where did the store go? What's going on? What's the problem? You know, it can be a big headache. And, you know, it's good for the lawyers. We get a lot of legal fees from, you know, people failing to do their due diligence up front. But it's not good for the actual business owners.
Sure. You know, and interestingly enough, the whole IP, you know, you mentioned suite of services or something like that. But the whole IP stuff has a tangible value. You know, when I used to be back in another life, when I was doing mergers and acquisitions, that was one of the things that we looked at. Do they have any IP protection? Do they have something that that could be patented or was patented or anything like that? Because that could add, or in some cases, detract from evaluation.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Because ultimately, with most modern companies, if you think about it, a lot of the value isn't necessarily the inventory or the machinery. It's, you know, the edge, the X factor, what makes this company, you know, stand apart from its competition. And usually that's IP. It could be something as simple as brand recognition, especially among a certain customer base. But it could be, you know, patents, which means that at least for the term of the patent, that company has an exclusive right to make a certain form of product. It's extremely valuable. It's a limited monopoly on a type of product. It could be IP founded in copyright. So it's, again, characters. Obviously, if a company has rights to produce media with some very popular character or some very popular storyline, that's very valuable. I mean, you know, Star Wars was purchased for $4 billion, and they didn't purchase the physical, you know, Darth Vader toys or the machinery to make them or anything like that. Disney purchased the rights to make Darth Vader toys and to make new Star Wars movies, and they paid $4 billion entirely, essentially, for IP. That was what that payment was for. It was just for the IP rights to the trademarks and to the copyrighted material, the characters. And that, you know, that was a huge purchase entirely based on IP.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think that's a great, great example there. So let's talk about this. You mentioned there is what? Trademark, there's patents, and there's what else?
Copyright.
Copyright. Yeah, there you go. So what's the difference? Walk me through, when do I get a copyright versus a trademark versus something else?
Trademark is my bread and butter, and it's kind of the most ubiquitous, I think, because I think every business has trademarks, whether they know them or not, and, you know, should be going out to protect them. So the USPTO term is source identifier, but the simplest way I usually put it to clients is it's branding. So anything you use to identify your particular brand, whether it's goods, whether it's services, whatever it is that you provide for value to your customers, although, you know, it could be free as well if you're a nonprofit, but however you identify your particular business to whoever it is that interacts with your business is a trademark. So the most common and the one I always say, you know, go after first is the name. So the name of your business is a trademark. Any slogans that you commonly use, you might, you know, use on your website, you might use it as, you know, a jingle greeting when people maybe call into your business, anything like that, that's a trademark. Any logo, you know, any image you use to identify your business, that's a trademark. These are, again, very important because that's how, you know, a consumer, a client would identify you. So, you know, if one of my clients was to make a referral, well, with me, maybe they'll do it by name, but they might also say, you know, oh, yeah, I use Trademark Garden. You know, they filed my trademark or they, you know, filed my appeal, whatever. And that's how, you know, it would spread. And that's how clients would identify your business to one another, and that grows your brand. So second is patents. So there's two kinds of patents. There's utility patents and there's design patents. A utility patent is a protection for some functional device. So there's rules on, you know, it has to be novel, it has to be something new that you invented, it couldn't have been disclosed for more than a year. But basically, if you invent some new device, some new thing that works in some new way and does something that hasn't been done before, you can get a limited protection for a term of 20 years to exclusively make that device. There's been a lot of software patents, although recently it's become much, much harder to get a software patent. But these are relatively expensive and complex, and usually patents are the purview of larger companies. Most small businesses, you know, don't, you know, invent completely new devices. They might have some, you know, spin on something, but usually they're not creating, you know, entirely patentable new devices. But for businesses that are, and especially in the tech industry, you know, patents are a major driver. And a successful patent on something that, you know, maybe you have some new, you know, phone battery that's going to last 10% longer. If you can invent that and patent that and then sell the license, you know, you're going to be a multimillionaire. You're going to set for life. And then there's design patents. Design patents are patents on a the visual, you know, aesthetic properties of an item. So the shapes of cars oftentimes get design patents. Although sometimes the USPTO gets finicky and says, well, it's for aerodynamic reasons, so it's not actually aesthetic, but usually it's the shapes of cars. The shapes of, you know, computer mice, the little soft cornered square phone charger is a design patent owned by Apple. So, you know, nobody else can make soft cornered cubic phone charger plugs.
Oh, that's interesting.
Things like that.
Yeah.
Actually, they have, so it's kind of getting in the weeds, but they're protected two different ways. One is design patent, and one is what's called a trade dress trademark. And Apple, I believe, has both for the soft corner chargers. So they really want to make sure that nobody, you know, nobody else is making little soft corner chargers. But they had reason to, because there were a lot of counterfeit Apple, you know, electronics chargers. And Apple, I mean, I don't have inside information on this. I surmise they were, A, they didn't want it undercut because of the prices that they charge for their, you know, products. And B, they were probably worried of getting sued of somebody buying a counterfeit Apple charger, it shocking them or something, and then, you know, them going after Apple and causing problems. So, but yeah, that's the design patent protection. And finally, copyright. So copyright is any creative artistic work that is set down in some physical medium. So music, you know, songs, you know, albums, everything gets recorded. So if you just come up with a song in your head, that's not copyrightable yet, but all you have to do is either record it, maybe write down the lyrics, you know, put it down somewhere, and then the actual ideas can be protected. So again, this is most common for any type of media production. So, you know, your shows, you know, all of your recorded shows are copyrighted, and copyright is bestowed automatically. So say you record a show, this show, once you record it, once you put it up on your site, you know, own the copyright to that recording. However, should you ever want to enforce it, you would need to register that copyright.
Interesting.
And registration of the copyright then allows you to actually enforce it against infringers. However, just the act of creating the work, you know, gets you quote-unquote protection with kind of a legal fiction.
Right,
it's mostly
right.
Just useful for if somebody ever, let's say somebody else tries to register it, you know, then you come back, you can say, wait a minute, here's evidence that I recorded this piece of work first, you know, you don't have rights to it, I do, and cancel their registration, you get a registration, and then you go after them for infringement. And the other thing it can be used for is DMCA. We hear a lot about DMCA. Essentially every media platform like, you know, YouTube, any platform that allows people to put on material that the platform itself doesn't really check for copyright has to have a system in place to comply with the DMCA, the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. And what this means is that based on a copyright that you have, you can have them take down the material. You don't need a registration to use the DMCA, but I would recommend against using the DMCA yourself. People do it all the time, and usually nothing happens because the person that gets DMCA doesn't want to hire a lawyer, but you know, doesn't have the money or doesn't think of it. But
right.
There are ways that if you use the DMCA incorrectly, there are statutory fees that the person that gets DMCA, if they can get a lawyer to show that the DMCA was incorrect, that any information you provided in your petition was incorrect, they can actually essentially fine you and get the money. So it's not something that you want to do without legal counsel to do it for you. However, it is a very useful tool that if you're making, you know, you're making audio recordings, you're making songs, making videos, making whatever, it's good to know that there are ways that you can get that stuff, you know, taken off any platforms that are trying to just take your material wholesale and rehost it as their own. And of course, the final point, like you said, with valuations, if you, you know, have some kind of media company, whether, you know, whether it's, you know, a YouTube channel or whatever that you're trying to, you know, make into a company and potentially sell the rights to something that you've created or a character you've created, then it is important to make sure that, you know, A, it's all branded correctly, but B, that copyrights to your material are registered so that a potential buyer knows, okay, this is all squared away. There's registrations for all of this. If we ever run into any problems, you know, we have a relatively quick and easy recourse, relatively easy way to show that this is our property now that we purchased it. And it's going to make it a lot more attractive rather than buying something where, you know, they know that they're, because after all, if you're paying for IP, you're not paying for a physical thing you can have in your hands put in the warehouse. You're paying for ideas, and you have to make sure as the buyer that those ideas are properly protected and you're going to be able to hold on to them.
Yeah, no. And again, one of the things I just learned is the fact that just your name alone can be protected, which is valuable. I mean, we're talking about branding and you know, you were mentioning that somebody will open up a company and they spend, you know, tens of thousands of hours getting that company out there. I mean, you know, SEO and marketing, and you're going to events, and it's worthwhile protecting. It's worthwhile looking at the advantage of protecting it and not just, you know, not just assume that it's, it's just going to happen naturally, or that, you know, what's the, you know, I think a lot of people will say, well, you know, I'm a small company, it's not going to happen to me, nobody really wants this name or something like that. You'd be surprised. It always happens to people who thought it'd never happen.
And, you know, again, I work mostly with, you know, smaller companies, anything from just sole proprietorships to, you know, maybe 20, 50 person, you know, companies. And, it amazes me how many just don't think about it. And then until they have a problem, and now that you have a problem, you're faced with, you know, the costs become a lot greater. There's other sort of non-obvious costs of rebranding, of losing everything that all the recognition that you've built up. In the case of, you know, media companies, you know, having to fight people stealing your, you know, your media, your artistic works. And it's that, I think a big part of it is that people think, oh, it's complex legal stuff. It's gonna drain my bank account. I don't have money for it. I have to spend it on, you know, SEO or inventory or whatever. But even compared to SEO, I mean, you know, an SEO company is gonna charge you, probably at least $3,000 a month, in my experience, even for a small company. And you know, again, you can get at least some basic, you know, IP protection for less than that. Just period. You know, you pay it, the work is done, it'll take some time to process, there might be some, you know, issues to get it past the examination, and then once it's registered, you have it for 6 years, then you just file a renewal, you have it for 10 years, and then you keep filing every 10 years, you can keep forever. And,
right.
And, you know, compared to all this other stuff you have to do, especially if you do, you know, paid ads, if you do PPC, you do SEO, And you think about it, after all, say you're paying for SEO, what are you really paying for? You are paying for people to try to increase the search rankings of your name, right?
Right.
You're trying to get your name into the eyeballs of more people searching for the relevant, content, the relevant services, the relevant goods. Well, you know, what happens if you're forced to rebrand? Suddenly, the investment that you've made in that goes essentially to zero. You are no longer what you are. You're now something else, and you basically have to start over. So the money that you invested in that is lost. So why not insure it before you invest that money? And that's what, you know, that's what I really try to get across to people. Obviously, I do a lot of, back-end work once there are problems, but I really try to, as much as I can, say, okay, let's, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Let's try to prevent any problem from ever happening. You'll pay a lot less money. You'll be happy. Then you really won't have to think about it, you know, and you'll be safe going forward.
Absolutely. Let me ask you this, because we're out of time. So I wanted to talk quickly about Trademark Garden. Trademarkgarden.com is the website. Is that right?
Yep, that's correct. Yep, all one.
Trademarkgarden.com. And so if somebody's curious, they can go to trademarkgarden.com. They can, you know, they can ask you questions and check out some of the resources and basically get some help.
Yeah, absolutely. You can go to trademarkgarden.com. You can email the firm just generally at info@trademarkgarden.com. Or if you want to get in touch with me, I'm Anton, A-N-T-O-N, at trademarkgarden.com. Again, all one word, no hyphens or anything. I'd be happy to, take a look at what your needs are. I have some, you know, kind of pre-baked filing packages on the site, but I'm always happy to, you know, talk to someone and see what it is that they need protected and to figure out, you know, what makes the most sense for them as far as, you know, what we need to file, what trademarks and what classes, get all that stuff figured out and get you going.
I love it. Antoine, thank you so much for stopping by and helping us out or helping us understand a little bit more about trademarks and patents. And if somebody wants to talk to Anton and his team, they can go to trademarkgarden.com, trademarkgarden.com. Antoine, thank you so much for stopping by. You bet. Good stuff there from attorney Antoine Leonov. He is the founder of trademarkgarden.com. And the law firm, as you can tell, serves, you know, the needs of small businesses, startups, innovators, and really gets you protected for, for the future. And, you know, some of the stuff that he talked about is stuff that happens every day. Every day, somebody wakes up and they find out that the company that they've been promoting, that they've been promoting may be protected by somebody else or is getting confused with somebody else. So having a well-protected name is paramount. As always, my friends, thank you so much for stopping by. Please share this episode with everyone you know that has a business, really just about most of us nowadays. If you are, a manager, a CEO, an executive, share this episode with people around you so they become aware of what's happening. Share it with your customers and your contact list. As always, thank you so much for the fact that you guys do share it. And I appreciate your following. I appreciate your comments and your remarks. As always, my friends, thank you so much. And remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.